In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest this go-round is Will Scott, and he is the drummer in The Now. They're a band based in South Wales in the United Kingdom. Their latest single, Devil Inside Me, is also a recent coolest song in the world. We'll hear a portion of that now, followed by my interview with Will on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and joining me today for our coolest conversations is Will Scott, the drummer in The Now. The band is based in South Wales in the UK. The new single, Devil Inside Me, is our coolest song in the world this week. Hey, Will, how are you?
Oh, I'm fantastic, and even better for obviously speaking to you and being on such a fantastic radio, Manfred. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, that's nice to hear. I tell you what, you're a man that knows more flies are caught with honey. I can hear that. That's good. That's good. Actually, it's funny. It's about this time last year I spoke to, I think it was Shane.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right. I spoke with Shane, and I can't quite remember. So where in South Wales are you guys based?
So I'm based in a place called Tredegar, but the band itself really plays out in a place called Swansea. So, yeah.
So how far are you from that?
So I live about, I'd say an hour, which is about, it's about 40 or 50 kilometres from sort of where Shane and Brom live. So yeah, it's a bit of a trek for practice and things, but we just make it work, you know?
Right. And so is this where you grew up?
I grew up in Tredegar, yeah, but the boys obviously grew up in Swansea, yeah. So there's a bit of a distance between us.
Oh, but not when you're close together, though.
No, we're me close together, of course not. We come together as one man for when we're together, you know, like,
so
you know, like we're the same beating heart when we're together, don't you worry about that.
Oh, that's it. Until you're trapped in the van and you're smelling each other's farts, then it's going to fall all apart.
Exactly, and then we end up fighting, but apart from all that horrible nonsense, we are as one.
Well, so you are the drummer man, and we all know that the band is only as good as a drummer, the foundation, right? Foundation.
I can't get this.
Because of that jealousy from other musicians, given the prominence, the importance of the drummer, oftentimes there are drummer jokes. Now, you guys are always making fun of each other, poking fun of each other, but out of musician-type jokes, you know, a lot of drummer jokes. Now, at least that's the case here in the U.S., Is that a similar thing in the UK? Does the drummer get a lot of grief?
Yeah, it's, I think it's sort of that's come across the pond as well. I think, you know, it's this the old adage of, you know, when the drummer's knocking, the door is out of time, you know, all those sorts of things. You know, I've cried myself to sleep many a night, Manfred. So, you know, be gentle on this soft sense of soul of mine.
Now, the reason I had an especially loud guffaw there is because the drummer joke, my favorite drummer joke, is the one about knocking on the door, and you just nailed it. You
Oh,
know,
I'm sorry to the viewers. We didn't
no,
speak
no,
about
that's that that's good.
the
I was gonna go gentle on the one about drooling out of both sides of the mouth to be able to tell
beforehand.
when the stage is level or not. So
Honestly.
when did you start playing the drums?
I got into it quite late, to be honest. Obviously, you're in the UK, we call it football. Obviously, you guys call it soccer. That was sort of where we from. That was the sort of the ticket out of sort of the working class sort of background that we from to become really good at soccer or sport or rugby. So I was sort of dragged into that, I suppose, when I was younger. But somebody lent me Nevermind by Nirvana on cassette. I'm sure my age now. I got lent to just on cassette, on an old cassette player. So they lent me Nevermind by Nirvana, and it just went from there. I loved the songs. I loved, you know, the sound of the drums sort of hooked me in. And coincidentally, there was sort of a local youth club nearby. The guy that was running it was in a band, and he could play all the different instruments. And me and my sort of three or four friends from school went up there, and we all sort of picked an instrument. And luckily or unluckily, I don't know how I would describe it, I picked the drums, and here I am now speaking to you.
Was there much music in your home growing up? Did your like did your
No,
parents
not
play
really. You know,
instruments or family, or did they just listen to music or what?
well, it's quite this again. It's a bit of a funny story with us, considering my dad liked music, but it was sort of like you know, when you get like those compilations, like the dad rock CDs that you sort of have in the car, you know, with the generic sort of Phil Collins, you know, and you know, nothing sort of really cool, but sort of the generic sort of rock was sort of played when I was growing up. But I found out recently, on my dad's side of the family, I've got quite a few cousins. I've got my four or five male cousins who I've honestly never really spoke too much. And it turns out they're all drummers. And I only found out recently that there's some sort of like reoccurring theme in the family, that there's quite a lot of drummers, and I honestly never knew until a couple of years ago, which is really strange. So it's fate.
Well, so
Fate or
it
good
is fate. It's fate.
genes, one or the other.
You had no choice in the matter. It was preordained.
Well, the gods, I'm putting it down to the gods, Manfred. The
Chariot.
drumming gods, you know.
So when you started slapping the traps, I mean, was your family supportive of that, or did they think, or did they, did you like your dad? He secretly knew. Well, it was only a matter of time.
I think they were supportive, and until obviously when I was living in a two bedroom terraced house with my mother. And then as soon as you start playing drums in the bedroom, I think they sort of underestimated the volume that would come off those drums, and sort of the neighbors. So they were supportive up until that point, until the roof started falling off. But yeah, no, I got to be honest. Yeah, they were really supportive. My dad was, I think he was really shocked that I sort of went from being sort of a semi-good footballer, soccer player, to randomly going on stage and playing the drums. I don't think he saw it coming, but yeah, he's been really, really supportive since. And yeah, I'd say everybody in the family's been supportive, luckily. And many a birthday and many a Christmas present have been drums, cymbals, sticks, skins, pedals, stands, you name it.
Oh, that's really cool. So the rest of the band includes, I mentioned already, Shane Callahan, rhythm guitar player, lead vocalist. There's Calum. How do you say Calum's last name? Is Bromage? Bromage?
Well, I quite like fromage. That's quite cool.
Bromage. So there's a little
It's going to be fromage.
continental
That's it now.
twang to it. Yeah.
Fromage, fromage. No, Bromage. Well, his nickname is Brom. Nobody calls him sort of Carl, and we all call him Brom. But
Okay.
I'm now going to call him fromage just off the fact that you've just planted that little seed into
He's
my
like a
mind.
fine cheese, kind of, isn't he? He's a
Ah,
cheese
that's Carl Fromage. Yeah, he's from Paris and he plays guitar. Sounds fantastic.
guy.
A lot better than
Great.
Carl and Bromic
I
from
picture
Swansea.
Brahm with a little baguette
A
under
black
his
and white
arm and
striped
a.
top, a beret and a baguette, and a
That's it. I
guitar.
was trying to think of the word, beret or baguette. So he plays, I guess he's the lead guitar player. Is that right?
He's the lead guitarist. He's the guy with all the riffs and the solos. And Shane is just the rhythm. And then Jay Evans plays bass. You know, you've got to have a bassist, unfortunately, haven't you?
Well, you and the bassist, of course, you're keeping it tight. You guys locked in together, right?
Yeah. We many practice you spend sort of just the two of us smashing it out to make sure we are as one, as they say. So, yeah, no, all good.
Yeah. Well, how did you meet these guys?
Well, I've known Jay. I knew Jay a lot more than I knew the other two, than Shane and Brom. We were both sort of in bands and we played a few gigs together, sort of got sort of friendly. And then, as you know, bands break up and fall apart. And obviously Jay got into the Now with Shane and Brom. And then the drummer left to go in the army, funny enough. So they were looking for a drummer for ages. Mm-hmm. And randomly one night, I had a message off Jason. I kind of give her a ring. And I was like, yeah, of course. And then he said, oh, do you fancy helping us out? So I was like, yeah, definitely. Even though I'm in another band, I said, I'll help you out. And then that band happened to coincidentally fall apart. And yeah, it was just quite a smooth, silky transition, just like the smooth, silky transitions in between his song world album, Manfred.
Wow, that's what a nice turn of phrase, smooth, silky transition. Yeah. So when was that? When about, what year about was that?
It was, I'd say it's coming up, it's not quite 2 years yet. I think it's been, we're sort of around June, July of 2021. That's sort of the first time I ever practiced. And then, yeah, sort of, it's just been on a trajectory just since then.
Wow. Well, let me ask you this. This guy, I don't know if I'm saying this right, Ole Jacobs, he produced the EP, The Truth mm-hmm. Always Comes Out in the End, right? Okay. So he also produced a new single. Is that right? Devil Inside Me, he produced that?
Yeah, he produced the EP, the single, and he's produced the album as well.
The upcoming album. And his studio is in Bath. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. It's in Bath. So Peter Gabriel's studio in Bath. It's called Real World. Ollie is one of the obviously the engineers sort of studio guys there, and he's also a bit of a genius.
Well, do describe his geniusness to me. What is genius about Ollie?
Well, he has recently, I think in the last couple of weeks, won a Grammy for his work, I believe, with Harry Styles and all the 1975. So yeah, he's doing pretty well with his Grammy, I'm sure, on his mantelpiece.
He can use it to prop open a door.
He's got his Grammy on the left-hand side and the Now's EP on the right-hand side. That's what I'm envisaging anyway. So I'm hoping I'm correct.
Yeah. That sounds like a good setup.
With equal stature, I'm sure, in his life, you know, the Now EP and album and his Grammy.
So what was your first impression of him? I mean, you described him as being a genius, but is he bombastic? Is he sort of laid back? What is your impression, your first impression of him?
He's definitely not bombastic. Well, my first impression was I was late because I was working. So I had to sort of put my foot down to leave work and get to the studio. So, when I turned up, I was just rushing, just literally sat on the stool of the drums and played. So, no, he was quite, I've obviously been in studios before with other producers and they're quite hands-on and I wouldn't say like a dictatorship, but some of them can be a little bit like that, but Ollie's very much I think he just wanted to be sort of as authentic as possible. He obviously will get involved, and he plays sort of so many different instruments. He is honestly absolutely bonkers. We might need like a little piano part, and he just stands up and is done within one take, within 10 seconds. And we're just like, oh my word, where on earth did that come from? That's the perfect piece that could have fit the sort of song jigsaw puzzle. And his sort of production ideas are great. He's literally changed the songs. You know, obviously when we record a song, we very much, you know, verse, chorus is loud, is quiet, you know, loud, quiet. That sort of old adage. And then we go to him and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to change every single aspect of this song. And, you know, immediately when you say that to a musician, panic mode sets in. Oh, my God, they're going to change the song. And then the finished article will be like, oh, my, that's just, never could have imagined to be like that. And that's what the album's been like. It's just been sort of a Yeah, it's sort of been like a journey for us, for the songs and for us as people, really.
Well, let's talk what you've just described him as like working with arranging songs. Let's apply that to your coolest song in the world this week, Devil Inside Me. So first, tell me how the song was written. Like, was this a collaborative thing? Was it Shane who wrote the song?
Well, it's sort of the same sort of structure that we sort of have all the time, really. There's sort of a bare bones idea,
yeah,
which can range from a riff of 10 seconds. It can range from just a vocal idea or a lyric idea or just a chord structure. And I the Devil Inside Me, I think, was it was just sort of a chord structure. We had sort of a cool verse going on. And then I don't know whether this is quite a coincidence, but I when we were playing, when we were practicing it, you know the song by INXS, they got a song called Devil Something.
Okay.
And I was thinking, oh, it reminds me of that song called Devil Something. And I said, oh, I know what it is. I said, this chorus should be Devil Inside Me. And it just sort of, and it went from there. We were in a awful, crappy little studio with the worst equipment you can imagine. Huh. And it just sort of, Devil Inside Me was born. And I just planted that little seed to Shane, and Shane ran with it. And here we are, the Devil. And, you know, Callum came up with the riff, which I think you might have come up with in the studio. And yeah, it just sort of brings the whole song to life. And yeah, the little jigs of puzzles come together to create, well, I'm not going to say a masterpiece, so that's quite conceitful of me to say that, but it's created the coolest song in the world, you know. So
again, well said. So so it doesn't sound like Ollie had as much of a hand in the arrangement with this one, or did he?
No, I think because this is just sort of a in-your-face rock and roll track, isn't it? I think he just sort of, you know, let us take this one. But I think what I think his main concern was is we did the EP, which is all in the same vein, and you hope for that as a band, and with an EP, you don't want four random tracks put on an EP. You want there to be a put your stamp on there, don't you? But I think he expected and wanted more for us and more for the band than just sort of having another 10 or 11 songs in exactly the same vein. So with this one, it's sort of just sort of, you know, an in-your-face, balls-out rock and roll song. But then there's other tracks on the album that fit, you know, very well together, but not as sort of, not as sort of the typical rock and roll, you know, verse or chorus, etc.
So you had this initial sort of lyric idea, we'll call it, Devil Inside Me, works for the chorus. We all got a little devil in us. Has your little demon, your little devil, gotten you into any trouble recently?
Well, I think our devils and demons always get us in trouble, or could get us in trouble on a frequent basis. But I think, I think it's time and place, isn't it? And knowing the audience, you know, literally, and just keeping it in line. I mean, obviously, recording the album in a studio with the boys for 7 days is trying, especially with all our little devils inside of us wanted to rear their ugly heads on an hourly to daily basis. Yeah. So I think luckily we keep each other in line and make sure that, you know, work comes first and pleasure comes next, because the last thing you want to do is, you know, spend your time in the studio when you get the opportunity to and muck it all up because you're trying to be rock and roll stars when you're not quite rock and roll stars yet, which I think many bands have done over the years.
Well, that's going to tie into to something in a couple of minutes here I'll ask you about. But so Devil Inside Me, that's off this upcoming album that you have mentioned that you guys have, I guess you finished recording the album or not?
Yeah, we went to Real World. We had sort of a set time, you know, obviously, because if we wanted to go there for a month, it's going to cost way more money than if we went there for 10 days. So, we had sort of 10 days. We went in there, we did a lot of sort of pre-recording prep so that we knew that we were in the best position to be when we went in there. And we just went in 10 days and we smashed it out. So we could be happier, really.
And when is it due out? I mean, I've just been told sometime this summer, but do you have a more specific time, or just sort of generally it's the idea it comes out in summer?
I think what our aim is to do is, obviously, we're going to release, you know, 2 to 3 singles, and then there'll be it'll come after that. So I think, yeah, maybe summertime. I've not been given, pardon me, I've not been given like a specific date. Obviously, Gary is the boss, and we all listen to Gary. So whatever, you know, Gary thinks is best. So yeah, I think it must probably be sort of summertime after, you know, single two and three have been released, when we decide what single two and three are going to be, because it's a tricky one, man, because you've got so many fantastic singles we could release. What a gifted position we're in.
That is. It's what a plight to be in, you know.
Exactly. All killer, no filler, as some 41 once famously said.
Say again?
I said, all killer, no filler, as some 41 once famously said.
That's it. So you got the thing, the album coming out, we'll just say sometime later on this summer, but of course you're not just sitting there on your haunches up until then. You're still musically active. You're playing shows. Like, for instance, today's the 24th. You got a gig tonight. Where are you playing? You're playing in South Wales? Where are you playing?
Yeah, we are playing in South Wales. We recently played in Tenby Pavilion a couple of months back with a band called Reef, what a massive song in sort of the 90s. And it's like a 1,000 cap venue. And it was a great gig. And yeah, we've been asked to go back again and play tonight. We're playing with, I think, the leading or like sort of the best AC/DC tribute act in the UK or possibly in Europe. I think there's been like 600 to 700 tickets were sold. Potentially could be sold out to 1,000 people tonight. So yeah, we are we're very, very much looking forward to hopefully gaining some more fans.
And are you an AC/DC fan?
I mean there's the thing with that one of those bands. I think everybody's an AC/DC fan, and I don't think I've ever sat down and listened to an AC/DC album, but obviously, you know, Back in Black and, yeah, you know, and also they, you know, absolutely, you know, world renowned and, you know, rock and roll songs of fit Hall of Fame, really, aren't they? So, yeah, I'm a big AC/DC fan.
So how much touring do you guys do over the course of a year? You mean you'll be doing more things, obviously, when the album is out. But in the couple of years that you've been together, I mean, will you go out for a couple of weeks, or do you just play like sort of more like pinpoint certain like weekend shows to do, or have you gone out for several weeks at a time?
We've obviously, unfortunately, we've not been in this sort of position where we can go out sort of for weeks and weeks and months on end, just because, you know, we still obviously still working at the moment, the four of us are. So we've got to, you know, balancing up work and the band. But you know, we've been out for like a week here and there. We've got obviously shows lined up in the summer. We will literally play whatever we can at the drop of a hat. If, you know, when gigs sort of are thrown on us, we travel in the UK as much as we can. We've just played recently in Cardiff and Gravesend, which is about 200 miles, well, 250 kilometers from each other. Yeah, we'll play as and when, like, you know, there's no better practices than live practice, and there's nothing that we enjoy better than playing live. So we'll literally play wherever and whenever we can. But hopefully with these singles, with the album, you know, living the dream is obviously the band to be the job, and that to be our living, make a living from the band. So yeah, in the summer, festivals, gigs, you're then everywhere, and you never know, we might venture over the pond one day, then, you know, you can come and watch us, Manfred.
I would love that. You're always welcome here in the City of Angels.
Oh, I'll mention that to them when I come over there. Manfred, yeah,
tell my new friend Bromage that you guys are always welcome. I'll meet him at the train station and give him a baguette or something like that.
That sounds fantastic.
Have you ever been to the U.S.?
I have. I'm coming back to the U.S. I'm going to come to New York actually in May for a bit. I went to New York a few years back. I enjoyed it, but then coming back again for a little break for I think 3 or 4 days in May. So I'm really looking forward to that. But I've not ventured further than the New York. Hopefully the band adventure will do that for me.
Well, very cool. So when you guys play New York, it'll be old hat to you. You know, you can kind of show those guys around, show them the sights.
I'll pretend to know all the places, you know, and, you know, I'll have all the spiel, and I'll be hailing taxis like a professional, you know.
All right, right, right. Well, hey, we got to go out, need to go out with a tune, and I want us to take a listen to this track that's off the debut EP, The Truth Always Comes Out in the End. It's a song, you could have sort of alluded to this earlier, the track's called Rock Star. And, well, first let me ask about the song. What do you recall that one coming together in the studio? What was that like?
I think, from if my memory serves me correctly, which I hope it will, I think this is the first one. I think this is the first song we wrote as the four of us, because obviously there was a few songs that were already songs before I got in the band. But I think this was the first sort of one that came as together. I think this came from bass riff, actually. I think Jay just started playing the bass riff. And it just went from there. It's sort of Shane has written about his dream of becoming a rock star. And I think the song tells the beautiful tale of that. So well done, Shane.
Yes, it's an albatross, though. Be careful. Be careful. I was thinking about, rock stars. And I was having a hard time thinking of any rock star that's actually under the age of 50. And then I did think of one just before we started talking. I thought of one. So I'm going to ask you, can you think of any rock stars that are under the age of 50?
Oh, my God. That's quite bad, isn't it? We sort of the music sort of situations where we are sort of rubbing our heads thinking of who it could be.
I couldn't think of anybody.
Is he a rock star? I don't know. He's quite quiet, I guess.
Yeah, it's.
Who were you thinking of?
So Jack White was the only one I could think of.
Jack White. Yeah, that's a good.
And so
choice.
I looked it up to see exactly how old he was, because I thought, he's got to be at least 50, and he's not. He's technically under 50. He's the age of 47.
Ellie, would you say, would you class him as a rock star, or is he more of a sort of a public figure? I don't know.
Who?
Machine Gun Kelly.
Oh, I don't know.
Post Malone. I don't know. They sort of. I don't know. They sort of. If there was a Venn diagram for being a rock star and maybe not being a rock star, they would sort of fall in the middle of said Venn diagram, wouldn't they?
Yes. Yeah. Let's think of you, Will Scott. I want to think of you, Will Scott, as a rock star. And what would you do as a rock star? What would your lifestyle be as a rock star? Would how ostentatious would you be? Would you fancy yourself to be? Or would you be, I'll have my little manor house in the countryside somewhere, or you can want a Rolls Royce, or what the hell is Will Scott's vision as a rock star?
I think I'd try and do both if it was possible. I mean, you think Keith Moon driving a Rolls Royce into a swimming pool and stealing an ice cream van and driving around New York and ice cream to people. But that's only going to last you so long, isn't it? Before, the missus, plus a ball and chain around my neck, So I don't know. I try and live. I don't want to be biting any bats' heads off on stage. I draw the line there, but I think I definitely have a fake fur coat and a gold chain. And I don't know. I think I'd have to have a ridiculous car that I would possibly drive into a swimming pool. I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
Well, Will, I have to interrupt to say I think it's so cool that, as you were envisioning yourself as a rock star, you drew on your fellow drummer there.
I know. I feel caught. I wouldn't have a real one, but I definitely can see myself walking around Las Vegas with a fur coat on, without a top on underneath. I'm not even going to wear a top. I have a fur coat on. I'm going to have a fake fur coat. Some sort of gold chain. Why not? I'm a rock star. I'm going to wear a gold chain. I'm going to have a hat in it with one of those leaves in it, like they do. And I'm just going to go around placing stupid bets and eating myself to death, maybe like Jim Morrison did towards the end on Elvis on burgers. Things that sounds pretty cool to me.
It is. Well, Will, thank you so much for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
That's okay. So obviously, it's a massive pleasure, Manfred, to be on. And thank you so much for the publicity.
You're certainly welcome, my friend. Let's give a listen now to Rockstar. It's off your debut EP, The Truth Always Comes Out in the End. It's the now in Little Steven's Underground Garage. That was Rockstar from the Now here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The track is from their debut EP of last year titled The Truth Always Comes Out in the End. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Will Scott for chatting with me today. And thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Ricky Bird was a longtime member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, and with them was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Afterwards, and beginning with Roger Daltrey, he's played with the Who's Who's list of greats, and he's also pursued a solo career as well. His latest single, Glamdemic Blues, is out now on Wicked Cool Records, and we'll find out all about it on your next Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.